Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Berkeley Alumni's Pass the Mic, where we pass the mic to you. My name is Jaquel Illy.
And it's your old pal, Patrick Pharma.
Whoop whoop, your favorite host, of course. And today we have a great show. But before we get to the great show, we also have some really cool clips from alums that we was able to get while we were in LA during the alumni brunch. One clip you'll hear, we have a rapid question, then we have another alum telling us a great story.
I like to call this segment Brunch Bites.
Brunch Bites.
Brunch Bites. So clever. Love it.
The first person we have up is Natalia Lacrete, who is an old friend of the alumni office, has been doing a lot of traveling around, was in Poland, was on the West Coast when we were doing the brunch, went to Valencia. Should we just get into it today? We got a mixed bag, but...
Yeah, let's get into it.
Hello, this is Natalia Lacrete here. I am a Berkeley grad for undergrad from 2018 and a Berkeley Valencia graduate from 2020. I studied professional music with concentrations in music performance and music business, and minored in performance studies and Latin music for my undergraduate degree at Berkeley Boston. I have, as well, a Berkeley graduate degree, Master of Music from Berkeley Valencia, where I did contemporary performance with a concentration in music production. I did piano as my instrument for undergrad and percussion for my graduate. So this is a little story of when I was selected to be one of the percussionists for undergraduate ceremony. It was a very amazing experience because we got to play music for people that were involved in creating some well-known music, such as Nile Rodgers. He did We Are Family. And we did Esperanza Spalding music. And Roseanne Cash, she is the daughter of Johnny Cash. So it's pretty dope. At the time, I was studying abroad my last semester. So this was like spring 2018. So it was very... It was a lot because I was traveling back and forth from Spain to Boston to do rehearsals. It was a great experience. You know, we played for over 7,000 people. And I think that's one of the highlights of my time at Berklee College of Music. So to those out there who are interested in auditioning, you know, for your graduation ceremony, do it. It's definitely something you will not forget. You will have so much fun. And that's something that I will always hold as a very good and positive memory. So thank you for listening to my story. Appreciate it. Have a great day, everyone.
Well, thank you, Natalia, for taking the time and telling us that amazing story. It's something that you can take with you forever, something that will never leave. And it's kind of cool to hear your perspective on that.
Yeah, and it is Women's History Month, and Natalia is a drummer, so shout out to all the women drummers out there. If other alumni out there have stories they'd like to submit, please, we could do like a little Moth Radio or some other type of segment.
Yes, send them over.
So next we have, and I'm going to take the hit on this one, this is a segment called Patrick Takes the Hit.
Patrick Takes the Hit.
All these segments, I love it.
So we got this rapid questions with this alum, but I never captured his name because I was too busy schmoozing.
It was a lot going on. So in your defense, my defense too, we met so many people, so many great alums out there. This one just slipped through the cracks and we are extremely apologetic.
Yes. We are now going to turn this podcast episode into a mystery where the audience solves a mystery. So if anybody out there can identify the person in this clip, please let us know, tag them. You know, I feel bad, so I'll have to send you a Berkeley keychain or something. So here's one of our other rapid questions.
Boom, finish the sentence. I'm a Berkeley alum, of course I.
tried to figure out how to make it in Los Angeles.
Pick one, F flat or E sharp?
Neither, because I'm a vocalist.
Ooh. Universal Music Group pulled their music catalog from TikTok. Thumbs up or thumbs down?
Thumbs down.
Name a group that you were a part of on campus.
BSI.
What city did you audition in, and what was the piece did you use?
I auditioned in Stockholm with a Stormzy song.
Favorite professor?
Gotta go with Pat Patterson.
How much was your rent as a student?
$1,200.
What's your thoughts on Mingus the Jazz Cat?
Mingus the Jazz Cat has really cool hands, and the glasses are a statement piece.
Got it. Have you listened to our new podcast?
I have not.
But?
I will.
I know that's right. Anything, last words for any encouragements to our graduating students?
Be nice to each other. Be attentive to the people around you. Don't walk around thinking that you know it all, because someone can always teach you something.
Boop. Thank you. Okay, well, that was a rapid questions from the mystery alum. So shout out to you. Thank you for taking the time.
I am so happy that we had an alum that appreciated Mingus the Jazz Cat. I am a huge fan of Mingus. I've had an opportunity to work with Mingus many times. I've found that I have a really, really great ability to direct mascots. It's always a pleasure to work with Mingus, and I'm glad that people are starting to get to know Mingus.
Yes.
Our third clip is going to be with Emmy Award winning Huey Stonefish. Huey is a songwriter and a member of Lou Burger, which really took over on the series Bring the Funny. Let's hear some rapid questions with Huey.
Pick one, F flat or E sharp?
F flat or E sharp? Okay, rapid fire. Neither. Just call it E.
Okay. Recently, there was news about the Universal Music Group pulling their catalog from TikTok. Mm-hmm. Thumbs up or thumbs down?
I released my album first on Bandcamp because it's just not right that we can spend so much time making music into it and we can't even make any money from it. So let's go.
Okay, what city did you audition in, and what was your piece that you used to audition?
I auditioned in Boston, and actually, I did so poorly in my audition that I was sure they would not offer me acceptance, and they did. So
and look at you.
Shout out, Boom. Berkeley.
Okay, favorite professor?
Favorite professor, Pat Patterson.
How much was your rent as a student?
I have no idea.
What's your thoughts on Mingus the Jazz Cat?
I don't know who Mingus the Jazz Cat is.
Okay,
who's Mingus the Jazz Cat?
It's the, the mascot?
Of Berkeley? We have a mascot?
Yes.
Bro.
Okay. Have you listened to our new podcast?
No.
Okay. But you will be, right?
I will be when I'm featured on it. And then I'll start.
Stay tuned.
I'll listen to a couple to get myself situated, and then I'll fall in love with it and I'll listen. Yes.
So you heard it here first. Huey will be on our podcast. Just stay tuned for it. All right. Last thing. Any words of encouragement for graduating students?
I learned so much about music and about how to make a career in music after I left there, and Berkeley gave me a great foundation in how to create music. So just keep doing it. The longer you can do it, the longer you can do it.
Well, that was the Rapid Questions series with Huey Stonefish. Thank you, Huey, for taking the time. We really appreciate it. It was such an eventful, quick little interview.
Yeah, and again, please, alumni, if you want to send in some audio to put up here, we'd love it.
Yeah, and we love to hear from you. We are passing the mic back to you.
Yeah, no, so today is a little bit of a mixed bag. We have an interview that you did with conservatory alum Karen Peterson Koresh.
Yes.
Which was one of the first interviews that we did. And it's interesting that Huey is in this episode, because Huey was one of the first alums to really talk about having a podcast. And Jaquel and I thought, since we are wrapping up season one with one episode left after this, we'd talk a little bit about the podcast's origin story and how long it took. Neither of us had produced a podcast before. It was a heavy undertaking for sure.
Yes, I would definitely say it was a journey. Even like during my interview process, you kept saying, yeah, I have plans of a podcast. I have plans of a podcast. And I'm like, oh my goodness, I've never did a podcast ever in my life. Like, this is going to be a journey. But I'm so thankful that you had this type of vision and, you know, empowered me to, you know, assure me that I can do this. And it's really cool just to see how it has come about. Yes, we just started last year, September. But like you said, this has been in the works. Like, we've been doing a lot of groundwork to get this up and coming. We did a lot of research to see what platform we wanted it to be on. We're doing a lot of marketing. It's just like, it's exciting to see where we are, but it's even more exciting to know that we have more opportunity to grow.
You know, I think the good thing is that Jaquel and I both have video experience. Mm-hmm. So with a podcast, it kind of, to people on the outside, might look easier because it's just taking half of a video and just using the audio, which is actually very liberating as a filmmaker. I like not having to worry about that and being able to focus on a long form medium. But yeah, no, I mean, I started in 2018 and we had talked about it. It was just a matter of finding the right person. And so even though I like to talk a lot on here, I always after a podcast episode, I'm like, was I too much? Did I talk too much? But this has really been Jaquel's baby since she started. And then at some point, you know, you can hear Jaquel doing all the interviews. At some point when we started putting the segments together and stuff, there was a need to have someone that Jaquel could talk to. So then I came along.
A very important need. Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I think I have the most fun job because Jaquel puts together all the structure and does a lot of the research and all that stuff. And then I can just kind of come in and be the comic wild card relief.
Some questions that I'm just like, huh? But it works. It's a great team effort. And it's really cool.
Like I said, this interview with Karen Peterson Koresh was one of the first ones. And we didn't have any equipment. We just had wireless lavalier mics. And we're like, we're onto something, but we don't quite know what it is. But we're not going to figure it out unless we get the ball rolling. So we started to do these interviews. And through the first year of collecting the interviews, we're still trying to figure out what's the tone of the podcast. How are we going to do a regular schedule, you know, because it would be great to get the first one out there. But unless you have a regular schedule, then you're just kind of haphazardly going through the calendar, throwing things up when you can. So we really wanted to make sure that we were able to have a good workflow, figure out how we could incorporate our student employees. And, you know, throughout that whole process, we had our coworkers being like, how's the podcast going? Where's the podcast? How's the podcast
looking going? Forward to it, telling us that they like, oh my God, I can't wait to hear this. We are super thankful and grateful to have your support.
So I think this is just a lesson to folks out there. Like, it's interesting to be a creative person in this era where there's tons of different media, tons of different ways to go about storytelling and showing your creativity. And now that we have this workflow down, it's daunting to get in front of the microphone every time we set up a new episode. But, you know, we know the workflow. We know what we're going to be doing after this. We know we have another episode coming up. We are building in systems to make things quicker for season two. Jaquel's not taking on all the interviews by herself, even though I love it.
I love it too.
So, I'm actually, it's giving me the warm feels to listen to this early episode before we even had a name for the podcast.
Yes, before we had a name, before we had cover art, all of that. So it's just cool to hear how you can grow. And it just takes one, right? There has to be a starting point somewhere. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't take that leap and start, then it will never happen. So yes, it is daunting to get in front of a microphone. It's daunting to hear your voice, right? And then it's like, what? Oh my God, I sound like that. But you know, it just takes one and we all need a starting point to grow from. So do it. If you were looking for a sign, do it.
And I think also the fact that Jaquel, you and I are able to work well together is a real testament to how we've been able to do this. Berkeley's all about networking and finding your people and finding that energy where you can be creative and stuff like that. And I think that adding another element in having someone to kind of share that workload is awesome. And it is also something that you don't have to necessarily be in the same room sitting and editing together. And we have it down now, folks. So,
yes. Got the magic.
Yeah. So are we ready to go to the interview?
Okay, y'all. Here we have an interview with me and Karen Peterson Koresh, and just a little bit of background about her. It was really cool to talk with her and to kind of just hear her journey in dance. She is very well known in the dance world as she has physical integrated dance. So for those who do not know what that means, is it's the collaboration with people with disabilities and not people who do not have any disabilities who dance and put together these performances for people to enjoy. Karen has been able to travel all across the world and has been able to perform in front of many different audiences. So to hear from her and to hear her input on about dancing and then just kind of like the evolution of dance and how she used to engage with dance while she was on BOCO's campus and to how she is as a businesswoman today, it was really cool to hear.
Yeah, I love being able to work with the dance division at the conservatory. It's just this whole other experience of working with the community and people that, you know, their body is their instrument. And yes. Karen has been a pioneer in this type of dance. You know, when the Americans with Disabilities Act came out, Karen was right there in the beginning choreographing these dances and finding all these types of different dancers. And she's really built a great community and a great company. And you get to hear how she's been able to navigate that through the years.
Okay, everybody, enjoy this interview with Karen Peterson Koresh.
Yes. Great day.
Yes. How does it feel being back in Boston?
Oh, my goodness. It's been such a long time. Very nostalgic, but I am feeling overwhelmed with, you know, the accolade that I received last night, the Berkeley Achievement Award. And my heart is filled. Boston brings back only great memories.
It's a pleasure to have you back here in your old stomping grounds. Can you explain a little bit about your time here at the Boston Conservatory?
Yeah. So as a young student in Worcester, Massachusetts, I used to attend several of the conservatory performances. And my hometown teacher would invite her classes to go with her to view the performances. And I just fell in love with the conservatory as a young girl, as a young impressionable teenager. And while I was at the conservatory, I received incredible training and inspiration from the staff and the faculty who were present there at the time. Yeah. We had a really great base of ballet training, contemporary training. We had wonderful compositional and creative classes that I think really have inspired me up to this day, you know, as I pursue my work in the field of physically integrated dance. We had a very small class at that time. There were only 20 in the class. So wow. It was an intimacy between all of us that created a real bond. And to this day, we are still friends with some of our graduating class members.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. So why Miami? Why did you want to move and start up your business there? Mm-hmm.
So after I graduated, I moved to New York City, as all young dance majors do. And I lived there for 2 years, and I took an audition for the Coconut Grove Dance Theater. And it was my first paid contract dance industry job. At that time, there were no Google Maps, but I found a map. And I pointed to Coconut Grove, and I said, I'm only going to be there for 1 year. That's it, 1 year. And so I worked with the company. Mm-hmm. It was actually directed by Billy Kirpich, who has passed on. But we had a phenomenal, we had many events in the community, outdoor performances, theater performances. She brought in guest choreographers. I actually had my first experience at UCP, which is United Cerebral Palsy Center. And at that time, believe it or not, I met my husband in ballet class.
Really? The same ballet class?
The company ballet class. He was not a company dancer, but he was trying to stay in shape and look for a girlfriend, and there I was. And the rest is history. Awesome. And, you know, Miami at that time was a young cultural city, and I got in at the ground floor. And I received funding almost consistently because I was one of the few dance professionals that stayed and kept working.
Wow. That's amazing. And it's funny how you met your husband in the dance profession, kind of. That's awesome. Do you guys dance sometime together?
We do. We take ballroom classes together. We have a mean cha-cha-cha.
Oh, wow. I'm sure that's beautiful. And what a great way to bond. I was doing some research and I read that you had spent some time in Los Angeles or in California.
In California, mm-hmm. in the 1990s,
yes.
When the ADA laws were changed, mandated by federal law, workshops on the west coast of the country, especially in California, they were opening up their workshops to people with disabilities.
Right.
And this is contact improvisational forms that... invite people, you know, of all diversities and abilities to move together.
Right.
So I remember taking the workshops and wheelchairs and walkers and canes were on the side of the wall and everyone was moving together.
Yes.
And for me, that was just, I had never seen that, experienced that, or it touched me very deeply. And I attended several of the workshops through Access Dance Company and through other workshops on the coast of California.
Right. So can you explain more about what about seeing just like the mixture of both people dancing with abilities and disabilities? How did that inspire you? Like what about that made like awoke something inside of you?
Yeah. Well, when everyone was moving together, there were no disabilities. Mm-hmm. There were just bodies moving together, especially when you didn't have the image of the chair or the walker or the cane. Everyone was moving in harmony, in tandem, as an ensemble. And I was really struck by the fact that I asked myself, like, who can dance? You know, who's allowed to be called a dancer?
Mm.
Who can be a performer?
Wow.
And those initial questions have stayed with me for many years.
Wow, that's beautiful. And I'm sure that, you know, just having that ability to ask those questions open doors for people who, you know, probably never would have thought that they could be dancers. Mm-hmm. And so how do you inspire people who don't think that they can be dancers to like be able to see within themselves that you are a dancer?
So it takes some time to develop trust and a good working relationship with abled and disabled dancers. I mean, it's not something where you just put two people in the room or the studio and it happens. There has to be a lot of exploration and research as to, you know, how does your skin feel? You know, how can we share weight? How can I use your chair or your cane to be part of this choreographic vision? It's a very tight collaboration. Great. And it's not for everyone. I mean, the dancers, young dancers have to have a sense of maturity.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about showing what you can do. It's more about the relationship that we can create together.
Wow. How do you go about the research that you just mentioned? Do you have professionals coming in to kind of give you some like insight about like the body, or do you do your own research?
Well, we always have a conversation about what dancers can or cannot do or will not do. For example, how can I climb on your wheelchair and go be upside down before the wheelchair falls over? I mean, we really test and challenge boundaries.
Wow.
Can you sit on the chair this way or can you move this way? And so there's always a dialogue that it's like, no, my chair is falling over. I'm falling backwards.
Yeah.
So that...
Yeah.
So we're always challenging the boundaries.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. I was also reading that you have mentioned that you like to create new sensations within your dancers. Can you explain that a little bit? What is a new sensation and how do you get that? How do you teach it?
Right. So sensations are impulses, physical impulses that come from you from the inside out. So, I mean, I'm going to make it very simple, but how can the two of us blow in the wind together?
Mm.
Or how can we together attack the space? Mm. How can we fall together? How can you? So these are imaginative directives. They're improvisational directors that I give the dancers to stimulate their imagination to create a sensation. And because I feel like sensation movement is more honest and authentic as opposed to me pasting something on them.
Can you explain how you adapt to new movements or put movements together for a performance that works for both people with disability and non-disability?
So we try to develop a common language, something we all can do. And obviously gestures are something we all can share. And that when we have a commonality, like what are the differences? So let's say the able-bodied dancers want to take those gestures and jump and fall and roll. So the disabled dancers are sharing the gestures. The able-bodied dancers are taking those gestures and developing them. So it's about manipulating the common language that we develop together. How we come together, how we separate, we go our own way, and then how we come back together with the common language. And every single group develops a different language.
Right.
Because you have different disabilities, and then you have different offerings, you know, offerings to me as the choreographer.
Can you explain offerings? Like offerings as what? Like just the movements of their bodies?
The movements, okay. The movement of their bodies.
Outside of the dance techniques that you have, you know, learned from here, what are other things that you have learned from the conservatory that you use in your everyday life?
I think that dance is a lot of hard work and you have to embrace the work. And if you're not work oriented or you don't have work ethic, it doesn't really work. You know, it doesn't. So I make sure that my dancers are really understand that. It's very easy to find movement number one, but it takes a little more work to go deeper and deeper to get something more interesting. And also, I guess, being committed to the moment, being committed to the process. When there were a lot of ballet and contemporary dance classes, and it, even though half the time, sometimes you did not want to go. It was cold outside and it was raining or snowing.
Yeah.
I always had a sense that you were there and you had to do the work and you signed up for this. Mm. And it was like taking your daily vitamin. And I think that has still stayed with me. I really try to work on a daily basis in dance in one way or the other.
Wow. That is awesome. And I think that's a great point because, you know, New England, we have all four seasons. Either it's raining or snowing. So it also shows like determination and how hard you want to go for something that you really want, right?
Exactly.
Yes, that's awesome. You mentioned like digging deeper to find more interesting moves. Do you find that dance today is not interesting? Because I don't know. I'm sure you're familiar with TikTok and all these TikTok trends and everyone's doing like kind of the same thing. Do you find that these are interesting? Are they boring now? Are the dance moves boring?
Yeah. Well, it's new technology and my hat goes off to new technology. And I think how much time do you have to create something? I mean, great choreography takes a lot of time and you really need to take the audience over 45 or 50 minutes to develop your ideas. But I think TikTok is great. I mean, people are putting movement together. People are dancing together. They're finding music. They're expressing themselves. I think it's a great tool. And maybe some of the TikTokers will get more interested in physically integrated dance or contemporary dance.
Right. to put into their content. I think that'd be cool. What are some advice that you would give to dance students today?
I would say do not get discouraged. Dance is a series of hills and valleys. As soon as there's a great hill, there's a valley. You have to climb up again. There'll be another valley. And having done this for so many years, you know, you get a grant and then you don't get it. And then you get great accolades or a great review. And then the next review is not so great. And you can't, I think you can't take people's opinions so seriously, like what they think. Or you should have done this in that dance. Or you should have used this music. I mean, it's really your personal journey. You have to really be in it for your own self, yourself, not self-worth, but your self-passion. And I know I've had times when things have really fallen apart. We were celebrating our 30th anniversary and then COVID took place.
Right.
And we had worked for a year. We had the costume designer in the studio. We had reserved two theaters. And not only did we put the plans on hold, but three of my dancers not only quit, but they left the state.
Oh, wow.
So I really had to start all over again. And, you know, I had run the company long enough to understand that, well, this is just a phase.
Right.
And I know I'm going to be able to pick the pieces up again and start over. But this is something you don't learn when you're young and you're starting out. So I would just tell young dancers, try not to get discouraged, you know.
Right. Keep going.
And there, you know, there's not a lot of money in dance, but everyone has that problem, right? And dancers need to work and eat, but everyone has that problem.
Right. That's awesome. That's, I think everyone will be able to relate to this great piece of knowledge that you're giving. Can you explain a little bit more about how you face adversity with COVID-19 hitting? And even though that kind of shook things up a little bit, how were you able to get back on your feet?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we had all of this rehearsal footage for our 30th anniversary for the live performances. So we celebrated our 30th anniversary virtually. We actually put the rehearsal footage together. I was interviewed, my dancers were interviewed, and they talked about the way that they were dealing with COVID. Shortly after that, the Naples Botanical Gardens, they asked us to perform at their outdoor stage with the audience seated in the back on the lawn, provided that all the dancers wore their mask while in performance. So we created a 45-minute dance, which is based on duets, only because we wanted to keep the grouping small.
Wow.
And so the dancers really needed, they needed the dance almost as a healing tool to work together again. And so we performed at the Naples Botanical Gardens. We were received very, very nicely. We went to another gardens in Miami, the Pinecrest Gardens. We performed again, and then we further developed that piece for indoor theaters. So that particular dance took us through COVID.
Wow.
We were able to work together in the studio by twos, and I think it brought a lot of, it grounded us in many ways. Mm. It was just so nice to be back in the studio again, working with each other. Even though we wore masks the entire time, this was the very, very beginning of the pandemic.
And then I've also seen that you kind of moved the dance lessons virtually.
Right.
Can you explain a little bit about that? How was that?
Right. And I received funding from the Miami Foundation to offer movement classes on Zoom. So they were open classes, and many individuals who did not take my class in the past because of, you know, access and travel or whatever, they were able to participate, you know, in my instruction. And that was a lot of fun. I got to meet a lot of new people. And then also with my in-school program, a lot of the students were still at home, and I taught them for a while. Some of them were in their pajamas, but it did get us through that period of connecting through movement, even though it was on squares on the screen.
Oh, wow. That is awesome. Just seeing everyone move at the same time. Because, you know, like Zoom, sometimes it has a delay, but like you couldn't really see that with the dance movements. So I'm sure it would look beautiful, just all the movements with the hands and stuff. Last night, one of the recipients, Rich Abante-Motes, she talked about how music can be like a healing therapy. Do you see that also a beneficial factor of dancing?
Of course, yes. Positive, so many positive elements of dance. So my approach to physically integrated dance has always been artistry versus therapy. But I definitely know that, you know, dance can heal you emotionally and physically, gives you social skills. For teenagers that I work with who have autism, it also allows them to express themselves in a way that they never had that opportunity to do. And I know the dancers who have worked with me, they, healing. I guess I don't know if it's healing. It's more of a wellness tool, you know, because I demand that they warm up together. We dance, we move together, and we're physical together, and they need to be in shape. I mean, to some regard. I mean, it's important for me that they have a presence physically.
Right. Within the dance. So with that being said, how important is movement? Like just movement in general, movement within the body. How is that?
Yeah, of course it's important. Yeah, if you don't move, you die. Of course.
Yeah.
Movement is just universal.
Right. It's like one of the things that get your blood moving, right? And pumping and all that stuff. So I agree. Your dance company is nationally known. You have traveled all throughout the world. Do you have any favorite locations that you have visited?
I really enjoy traveling to countries in Eastern Europe where they were trying to develop their own ADA laws. They were trying to understand what the needs were. Are people with disabilities. Some of the countries had not invited children in wheelchairs to attend school. I mean, this was some years ago, but I mean, the fact that we could demonstrate the communication and the integration, I think for many of those countries, it sparked an idea. And those countries were in Belgrade, Serbia.
Wow.
We went to Sarajevo, Bosnia. We were in Montenegro. So these were countries back in the 1990s, 95, 96, 97, where they were looking almost for role models in the world of the arts.
Wow.
How do you invite people with disabilities to be part of the dance culture?
Wow. So not only are you a trailblazer here, you're a trailblazer across seas and teaching over there. So how was it teaching? Was that like a unforgettable experience?
Yeah. Well, the language was a language difference.
Yes.
But through movement, you don't really need to speak too much. The complication developed when we had deaf dancers in Belgrade. Okay. So I would speak in English. The ASL interpreter would sign in Serbian.
Wow.
And that's how I taught the class.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. Is there anything else you would like to say? Anything you would like to add?
No, just thank you. This has been an incredible few days for me. And go Boston Conservatory at Berkeley.
Well, thank you so much for your time, and we are so blessed to have your presence here, and congratulations once again.
Thank you so much. Hey, Louise.
Yeah.
You know what's truly amazing about Berklee and the conservatory?
Oh, what is that amazing?
The incredible spaces and facilities we get to be in. Classrooms, practice rooms, concert halls, recording studios, you name it.
Yeah, it's really impressive and one of the big reasons I chose a conservatory.
Big thanks, not just to Berklee, but also to generous donors who make it possible.
Without their support, these spaces and opportunities wouldn't exist.
If you want to help Berklee continue having top-notch facilities to benefit students like us, visit berklee.edu/giving. Gifts of any size make a huge difference.
All right, and we're back.
We're back.
What'd you think about it, boss? How was the interview to you? What did you learn?
It's really going into another universe with me and listening to people talk about dance. I do not dance ever in my life. Ever.
Still on the bucket list of things to do. Gotta get it.
I'm good. I'm good on that. I'm like Brandon Walsh in 90210. I just don't dance. That's a 30-year-old reference now.
I gotta get Sophia must have some type of daddy-daughter dance coming up.
I'm dreading it. I take her to dance every week, and that's when I get my food shopping done. But
nice.
She loves dancing, and she's really good at it, and she definitely must get that from her mother. no, but I really loved how she's been able to take the skills of being a choreographer. There's a phrase that people say in the film world where the best camera is the one you have on you. I think there's people out there who really need to have a sacred area of space where they can control everything. In a lot of ways, that's not necessarily practical with real life. And I love how Karen has been able to take the dancers that she works with and find ways to build that choreography and really make beautiful artwork.
She is building a community, especially how with COVID and how she had to kind of pivot and do the classes via Zoom and just have a way for people to connect with one another. We think of music as a way for people to connect with one another. And it's also really cool to see how dance kind of falls into the same realm. Mm-hmm.
I think I danced once when I was 8 years old and someone made fun of me and that was it.
Stop. What about prom?
I'll slow dance, but that was about okay. It.
You were able to grow up during some really cool music periods and you didn't dance. Sounds kind of disappointing.
I will tell you, I did dance at one concert. And it was a Prince concert, center stage in the TD Garden. It was amazing. Wow. Amazing. Wow. And
I thought you was going to say Janet Jackson.
No, I didn't. That was my first concert. I didn't dance at that. I was like 12 years old. I was a little too intimidated.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Oh, but we do have a dancer on the show. I don't even know how we didn't get to this.
Oh my gosh.
Jaquel
really?
Danced.
Who is the dancer?
In the halftime show at a Celtics game recently. Do you want to tell us about that?
Wow, thank you. Yes, so I did have the opportunity to dance at the Celtics game on the 27th, I believe, of February. So the Celtics had an HBCU night. And for those who do not know what HBCU means, it is historically Black colleges and university. Before I got my master's, I got my undergrad at an HBCU called Albany State University, and is located in Georgia. Albany, Georgia. And so basically the Celtics invited the Divine Nine, and the Divine Nine consists of nine historically Black fraternities and sororities. And basically we just put on a performance kind of just highlighting our organization. And it was really cool. It was a really good experience being able to work together and to kind of showcase our culture and our history. And my mom got to come and see me. So that was also really cool.
I was going to ask.
thank you, mom, for supporting me. Yeah. Thank you, mom, for supporting me, who's also my sorority sister. But yeah. So thank you, boss, for putting me on spot.
No, I saw the video and I showed my daughter. So you're being a strong role model for her. She loved it. She was very excited. Did the Celtics win?
The Celtics did win. Okay. Of course. Of course they're going to win when I'm in the building.
They were playing a pretty banged up Sixers, so.
Wow. What? Stop it. No, no.
I don't want to say too much. The alumni love our sports talk.
Oh, yeah. Oh, true. Yeah.
This has been a fun episode. I know it's a little everywhere, but I don't know. I'm having a fun time today. So in honor of our Women's History Month, we are going to have Sarah Ada play us out. Sarah is based in New York, and she graduated in 2011. If you go to youtube.com/Berkeley alumni in our Variations Alumni Spotlights playlist, you can see Sarah's interview and talking about how she got pregnant in her last year at Berkeley. And
what?
Yeah, and so she did a lot.
Boss, why did you say that?
Because that's her story. That's her story. And that's her song.
Okay. That's what the song is about, her getting pregnant in school?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I'm not telling tales out of school here.
I want to say, like, why? He's like, yeah, talk about how she gets pregnant. I'm like, what?
So Sarah got pregnant in her last year at Berkeley. She wanted to make sure that she had the time set to be a mother. It was very important for her. And then have that in the works while she started to pursue her career. She's very, very talented singer-songwriter. And to play us out today, we have Dreams on Hold by Sarah Ada.
Bye, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to this episode, and look out for the next one next month.
If I had a talk with my younger self, my current existence would be tough to explain. She would want to know what went wrong. It's been nearly 30 years. She'd shake her fists and say, I thought by now I'd be a rolling stone. I thought by now I would be well on my way. This little girl cannot sympathize when I tell her childhood ambitions have to wait. I was once afraid to have this fate, but now I confidently say I'll put my dreams on hold for you. I'm still believing and I'm still scheming, good things come to those who wait, so for now I'll put my dreams on hold for you. I'm still believing and I'm still scheming, good things come to You